Hello, hello. What is happening? My name is Yogi Roth, the host of the Life Without Limits podcast, and I want to welcome you back, or welcome you to, this fun conversation. If you're coming back, you know what we're trying to get done here. We're trying to explore the idea of what does it mean to be human and offer people some tools or a subtle nudge to help you on your journey. Whether that means to go for it, whether that means to take a big risk, whether that means just get in touch with what you're about, that's what we're hoping to pull from these conversations. And they've been an absolute blast. In season two, which is going on right now, it's kind of taken us all over the map, right? We started off with Ted Robinson, my partner in college football. College football ended. I took off. We went to Iceland and we did a podcast on the top of a glacier, bounced around Amsterdam for a while, came home, did a podcast around the inauguration, titled What Does It Mean to Be Human, as we showcased a short film that you can check out at yogiroth.com or our YouTube channel, as well as the social media platforms, to take a look at that. And the most recent podcast was with Kati Cohen, and that was on the beaches of Tel Aviv. And the feedback on Kati and I's conversation has been off the charts. So many of you who like to travel and explore or want to, I think were really impacted by her words. I mean, her depth was absolutely insane. And I think today you're going to get something like that again. Today is Jonathan Baruch. And Jonathan is a founding partner at a place called Rain Management Group and Storyby, which is a media company basically that manages careers of artists and creates content. So all the things you've seen on TV and movie theaters, and they represent those people creating it, and Jonathan helps produce a lot of that. So from Nashville to Empire to Bones to The Americans, I mean, a lot of the cool shows, and they'll all be linked in this podcast, he's been involved in. He's also been heavily involved in my career. He's my manager, but also a really, really close friend. We've gotten to know each other on a bunch of different levels. God, I think it's been 4 years or so that we've been working together. And he's a guy, when I first met him, I said, all right, this is a guy who gets me. And as a creative and as an artist, that's kind of all you want. It's kind of like an athlete. You just want that one coach. You know, you just need that one scholarship or that one snap or that one play. And that person give you a chance. And I think that as an athletically minded individual, that's all I've ever wanted. And when we met in his office, I knew instantly, all right, this guy, he kind of gets me. And we've had ups and downs, of course, like any entertainment career does. But this conversation is going to be cool for a couple reasons. One, you're going to learn his path and his story. He came out from the East Coast, moved to LA to enter the Hollywood scene like a lot of us because, quote unquote, I wanted to make movies, was his line. And that's just kind of how it always goes. So you'll hear that. You'll literally dive into some powerful moments with him, including the final meal he had with his mom at a place which was totally fitting for him, called the Authentic Cafe in Hollywood. And then you'll hear about our trip in Israel, because we went together. Jonathan, not only does he manage talented artists, but he produces a ton of content as well. And he's involved in this organization called Israel 21C, which will be linked in the blog post and talked about on the podcast. And it's basically about 21st century Israel. And there's a lot happening there. So we went down, and the goal was to capture this country in ways that's never been captured before. So American football, right? We saw that. We went to check out, you know, my tree, because, you know, when you grow up and you go to temple or synagogue and you're Jewish, if somebody passes away or something happens, you send a tree to Israel and they plant this tree for you. And there's literally like millions of trees. So we kind of had some fun doing that. We also explored where my mom was born, which was really cool. He took me up to Haifa. So we dive into the details around that. And randomly, we shot another short film that'll come out in a couple weeks titled What Does It Mean to Love, which we explored all over Israel. We went to Jerusalem, throughout Tel Aviv, and we met and talked to people, whether they were Arabs, Jews, Christians, Muslims, and asked them all that fundamental question about what does it mean to love, and got some really powerful answers. And overall, this trip for me, it changed my life. And I've been hearing from a lot of you that said, I want the update on Israel. What happened? We saw your pictures on Instagram or a couple of blog posts. Well, here you go. You're going to get it. And it's a really fun podcast because it's a little different than most. It's not a one-way conversation with me just interviewing Jonathan. We kind of bounce it back and forth like a tennis match per se. And I think we open up some really cool doors personally for both of us individually, but also open up this creative door into this country that a lot of people, I think, misperceive. You know, you think of Israel and you think of a war-torn community. You think of the Middle East, right? Well, we went there, and I can tell you from being there, it's my second time. Jonathan, he's been there probably over 20 times. It is a beautiful country. I felt safer there than I feel in Los Angeles, which I know sounds like a total trip, but it is the God's honest truth. So I'm going to get out of the way. I think you'll really enjoy this one. Jonathan is gifted in the entertainment scene. He's been doing it for a long time. He's been around some of the greatest performers, creators of content, and he himself one is that as well. He's dialed in the community. And I think for those of you looking at the entertainment community, you're going to hear a fun conversation between two people that work together and also travel together. And you know me well enough now, like I very rarely travel and roll with somebody. And Jonathan was awesome to cruise with. So you'll get a laugh out of it. I think you'll get impacted. You'll get inspired. And of course, let us know what you think about it. Pass it on to your friends and enjoy it. Here we go. From Venice Beach in the Life Without Limits studio, here's Jonathan Baruch. Oh, yeah. Good morning. We are here in the studio in Venice Beach, California.
Boca too.
That's right. That's right. Jonathan Baruch. You heard him in the open. His background a little bit. He is. He's in my home for the first time. Thanks for coming.
You know what? I got to tell you. I like it.
Yeah? Can you give people a little vibe?
I can give you a little bit of vibe. First of all, it wasn't what I expected. Oh. Although the truth is, I don't really don't know what I expected, if you want to know the God's honest truth. It's calm. That's the best way for me to. It's calm. You kind of like walk in. You got your downstairs vibe where kind of like the work stuff happens,
mm-hmm.
and then you kind of go up the stairs, and you kind of go into the zen.
Yeah, you do.
The zen. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff. Actually, some beautiful pictures from all your travels on the wall. Some of the kind of things that I think best represent you. I love that thing over there. It says, tell stories that draw people in. Anyway, so yeah, all in all, coolio.
I like that. That's a subtle drop on the podcast, too, because
it is.
Episode number two is Wordsmith, who did that painting.
Oh, cool.
And Feng Shui Guy, who was on this podcast as well, is the guy responsible for the shift in the Zen upstairs. But I want to drop right into our story and our path. We just came off an epic trip to Israel.
We did indeed.
I mean, to me, it was a life changer. But before we go into that, if you rewind the clock, you had a life changer of a trip when you came out to Los Angeles. And I think we all have our reasons why we go there. And you probably weren't prepared for this question because the only rule I have in this podcast is ask questions I don't know the answers to. So what, when you think about that trip for you when you were what, 21, 22?
22.
What made you get in the car?
Well, I actually got on Braniff Airlines, if you want to know.
Even better.
Okay. It's funny, you know, you kind of remember certain things, and it was Braniff Airlines. I remember my parents dropping me off at the airport. You know, I can't, though, remember how I actually felt in that moment, but I do remember getting off the plane, and I was wearing blue jeans, a kind of dark blue t-shirt, and I remember it was hot. I mean, it was just hot. I actually don't remember how I even got to my apartment. I think my roommate picked me up at the time. But it was, you know, if you really think about it, I just did it. It really wasn't, you know, it was just, I knew I was going to do this. And it wasn't like, you know, there was a certain expectation. Back when I was a kid, the way I grew up, you were going to, you know, go to high school, you're going to go to college, you're going to get a job. And I was fortunate enough that a friend of mine's father was, helped me, you know, kind of get an opportunity. And that's what kind of led me out here. But I always did want to be in the entertainment industry. I wanted to make movies because that's all, you know, that's all I knew, make movies. Yeah, I like to go to the movies, make movies. So Braniff Airlines took me out here. I got up, went to my apartment, 7616 Hollywood Boulevard, in a lovely one-bedroom converted into a two-bedroom where there was a piece of drywall stuck up on the wall. My roommates, other than my roommate Stephen Sadis, were a bunch of cockroaches. And my first meal was the All-American Burger.
Wow. Well, you remember your first movie?
Do I remember my first movie?
Yeah.
I think the first movie that I remember seeing was... at the Sands Point Theater, Yellow Submarine.
Wow. What do you remember about that day?
Like, was it a, I'm in Hollywood.
Let's well, my first this. Movie back then when I was a kid?
No, just curious when you got out here and you got to L.A. and you're like, okay. Because you hear this story all the time, right? I'm from the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania. You're from back east-ish. Right. And you're kind of just like, all right, I want to go make movies. All right, well, no kidding. So does the world. And you have iMovie now, which is great, and you got a phone. But to get out here and really drop into the industry, there must be a moment I'm imagining of a reality of like, whoa, I'm here. I'm in L.A. Now I'm in a movie theater, and so I'm now going to make something that's on one of these big screens.
You know what? One of the first movies I was actually was involved with was a friend of mine's movie. It was called God, what the heck was the name of that movie? It was like it was my friend Richard Goodbye, because I'd lived out here one summer and he was making these crazy independent films. What was it like? Oh my goodness! I have to actually, while we're sitting here, at some point look up the name of this movie because it was made for about $45,000. It was basically awful.
What year is this?
Oh, God, this has got to be like the, you know, 88 maybe?
Wow.
Yeah, 88. Now, I do remember, actually funny. No, you know what? I got a great story. A friend of mine by the name of Richard Arlick, someone I met, and he made a movie that was an MGM movie. Now, you have to understand something. When someone produces a movie, you're 22 years old. This guy was maybe 24, married, had a kid, produced a movie. So, of course, what would you think about someone that was 24, married, and was producing a movie for MGM? What would be your impression?
Mature as can be, like an old soul.
Right, old soul. But yeah, but what else? Come on. There's something else. When you think of the title, he produced by.
Well, so I think he's a rock star.
Exactly. Like, and what comes with being a rock star?
That life.
And what else, though? Come on, Yogi.
The dark side?
No.
I'm just thinking every Hollywood movie now.
No, you're thinking this guy's made it.
Oh, yeah, fair.
He must be living large. What I didn't realize is that you get paid 2 cents to produce these movies, okay? Oh. You know, I thought he was like this wild Hollywood success story. You know, years later, we laugh about it because he was just a struggling guy who made a movie, and I think he got paid like 2 cents to make the movie.
What's it like now looking back on your career? Because, you know, you're a veteran. You know, you've been through the craft. You've got your own management firm now, but you've produced, you've been a part of every nook and cranny of the entertainment industry. But I feel like just as a friend, you've gotten to this place where you want to create special content or meaningful content or nudge-worthy content to get people to do something in their lives. But you've been through this whole maze of this Hollywood industry that you came out on Banff Airlines on.
Yeah, Braniff, by the
Braniff,
way.
Braniff, excuse me.
Braniff, if
excuse
you get me. It, let's get Braniff. It right, please, okay? First, I feel very lucky. I mean, that's really, you know, because I have to kind of pull back and look at all the wonderful things in my life. And I start with the fact that I am, you know, happily married to Fran for 24-plus years. We have two beautiful children. I've got a daughter, Michaela, who's at NYU, and my son, Josh, who's going to be 17, is in 11th grade right now. I'm healthy, right? My family's healthy. I've got some really great friends that actually who I came out here with from home, friends that I came out with from college, and friends that I've made here. And I don't even want to call them friends because those friends have actually kind of evolved into my family because I don't really have any family. Actually, I don't have any family out here. So I think that, you know, it's just call it grace, call it whatever, but you know, I think you have to stop, you know, and one thing that the age does give you, I think, at least for me, is perspective, wisdom, self-awareness. So, you know, when you come out here, you kind of get on a path and certain things draw you into certain things. But then it changes and it evolves. And I think it evolves because of, you know, the good times, the challenging times, the sad times, you know, all different moments. And, you know, and they all kind of have the opportunity to define you. And each of those moments, whether they're the greatest of times or the worst of times, they're opportunities. Right. And so what I think I've been able to do is seize on those opportunities, in a sense. And they're things that I'm really proud of. And quite frankly, there are things that I'm not so proud of. But you know what? But that's really life, right?
Speaking of family, you unfortunately lost your mom at an early age.
I did. I was 23 years old. It was February 22nd, 1989. And when I think about it, I'd only been out here actually a year and a half. Kind of crazy.
How'd you process that?
Process. Let's think of a better word. What do you mean?
How'd you deal with it? How do you, I mean, you just give us this background, and if a listener's imagining an apartment with drywall and roaches as roommates, right? You've got this entertainment career that you're trying to figure out. You just produced a movie for $45,000, and you kind of...
My friend produced a movie.
Your friend produced the movie, so you're helping out.
Yeah,
so you're struggling your way through it, and then you're away from family, and you lose, you know, one of the more impactful people in your life.
Probably the most impactful person in my life. I mean, you know, my mother was, she was kind of like a part of my soul, and my mother understood me and was able to communicate me, quite frankly, in a way that no one else was able to communicate me with. And I, you know, I greatly respected my mother. I followed my mother, but at the end of the day, you know, what I really adored about my mother, and to this day still do, is that if she, you knew where you stood with my mom. So if you were in her good grace, you could do no wrong. If you weren't in her good grace, you better find a way to get back in her good grace. Or if she wanted nothing to do with you, stand aside. But how I dealt with it, you know, I think, you know, when that happens to you, first of all, the way it happened was sudden. You know, there was no illness. You know, I was working at the time at ICM, and I got a phone call. And I really just got a phone call, essentially, your mom died, come home. I mean, you know, that's the short version of it. It was a little, you know, but the first thing is you're numb. It's like, who the heck, you know, say what? Like, what's that about? But I'll tell you a couple things which were interesting when I kind of can reflect. My parents were together. And, you know, for the most part, happily married. You know, my mom, again, was the one that kept my father in alignment. She really kept the whole family in alignment when I think about it. But the gift was, before my mom passed, she'd been out here just with me. Just with me. And she spent a great week, stayed with me in my apartment. You know, and she went to see a cousin of hers who also lived in Palm Springs. But... I remember ostensibly my last meal with my mother at a place called the Authentic Cafe on the corner of, I think it was, not Curson. It was just on Beverly Boulevard. And, we sat at, high tables called? I don't know what they're called. Like
a two-top or something like that.
And, we had, the corn tamales, cause I love the corn tamales there. And, you know, while I hadn't, quote unquote, you know, had any pinnacle of success because I was working, you know, as an assistant and it was, you know, struggling still financially. But she saw that I was doing it, right? She saw that I was doing it. So, you know, you think about that and you go, wow, what was that about? Like, why did that happen? You know, was that her way of saying goodbye,
right,
in a sense? Sorry, was that her pulling the mic up? So was that her way of saying goodbye to me? But in terms of getting through it, I was, again, fortunate that I had a really, you know, I had some close friends out here. You know, one of my closest friends, a gentleman by the name of Joe Cohn, who had moved out here a little bit before me. You know, I grew up with him, and he was like a rock for me. And then there was my roommate, a woman named Bonnie Zane, you know, who at the time, who's now a successful casting director, but she was my roommate. She was my rock. And, you know, and a gentleman I worked with by the name of Gary Pearl, who I'm still friendly with today. You know, I'm not as close, but these were the people, you know, that kind of helped me, you know, push through it. But it was definitely a challenging, you know, it was a challenging, definitely a challenging time.
So you talked about your mom touching your soul.
Mm-hmm.
I just spent a week with you in Israel. Clearly has touched your soul.
Yes.
When was the first time that happened with this country?
Well, you know, I think it happened twice, but I didn't realize it happened twice. So I was fortunate enough to go to Israel in 1982. It was on a synagogue trip with my parents. You know, we'd grown up in the house, and Israel was an important part of our household. And I remember the biggest fight, literally the biggest fight my parents ever had. It was where Israel was located. Was it in Asia or Africa? They pulled out this enormous atlas. I swear this thing must have weighed about 50 pounds. They opened it up, and they were in a screaming match over where it was. Now, by the way, guess what? It's in the Middle East. I don't think it's in either place, if you want to know the truth. Right? Egypt, Africa, Israel, Middle East. So, but it was 1982, and I went there with my group of people, and I had a wonderful, wonderful time. I mean, it definitely touched my soul. And the reason I know that, actually, is there were letters that I found that my parents had saved. And I went and I read those letters, and I read them, and I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, some of the things that I was saying then, you know,
I wrote to them
from Israel about my experience and what was going on. Wow. You could see that it was powerful. But, you know, I have to say that life gets in the way of living. And so I went and I lived my life. And I obviously kind of, you know, my business, my family and all this stuff. And then after my daughter got bat mitzvahed, it was 2010, the cantor of the synagogue, Chaim, says, you know, we do this family trip to Israel. We're doing it this summer. We'd love for you guys to go. And my thing was, yeah, sure. I love to travel. You know, my kids had been, you know, we'd taken them all over the world at this point. So we went, and it was life-changing. It was life-changing. And I think a couple of things happened on that trip. First, it was just, I got to see my, you know, I have family there. I have cousins, I have aunts, who I often see when I'm there. We didn't get to see them on this trip because we were too busy. But I saw my Aunt Ida, who I had spent time with in that summer. And it had been from, think of this, 1982 to 2010 that I had not seen
her. Wow.
But it was as if when I saw her, it was as if I'd seen her like just the day before. So that kind of, you know, the idea, I have roots. I do have some roots there. And then the other thing that happened is there was a bar and bat mitzvah at the Southern Wall, and peaceful moment. And suddenly out of nowhere, rocks were being hauled at us from the top of the Temple Mount by young Palestinians. I don't want to get into politics, but it was just, nonetheless, you know what? Whoever said rocks, you know, aren't weapons, rocks are weapons. And then I realized, wait a minute, what's going on here? It's like I felt this kind of perverse obligation to get in front of this situation and make sure that this just wasn't going to happen. And, you know, you, as a descendant of Holocaust survivors, you know, you're like, wait a minute, people are like threatening my very existence, the people are with me, for what? For having a peaceful ceremony? You know, politics aside, what were we doing? We were just trying to, you know, do something beautiful. So when I got home, I said, I got to do something. And thus began my journey in 2010. And it has touched my soul, as you said, in a way that, quite frankly, why? I don't, you know, things like that are sometimes hard to explain.
Right. Interesting. So to paint a picture, I've known Jonathan for a while, and I described a little bit of that in the open. But I saw two different humans on this trip. And that happens when we travel. But you were a guy that, I don't want to say I didn't know, because I think that's a little overdramatic. Mm-hmm. But I think that I saw you in a light that I've never seen you as. When you look back and step outside of your body when you travel to Israel, specifically now, so from 2010 to 2017, who knows how many times you've been there? Clearly a lot, right? You have the nonprofit Israel 21C, which is linked in the blog.
Yep.
But curious how you believe you are when you touch down in this country that you feel so connected to.
You know what? I think my wife says it the best. I'm having an affair. but not with an individual or a woman, I'm having an affair with an entire country. And I've created, as you certainly have seen, I've created a life there. I have friends. It's bizarre. I actually know the place better. Let me say, I know Tel Aviv in particular better than any city in the world. And Yeah. I honestly, it's kind of bizarre to me, but I feel comfortable. I feel connected. I feel free, and I feel inspired. You know, and I think a lot of it also is, look, when I go there, you know, more than 50% of the time, because my family does come with me, and by the way, I've probably taken over, you know, with groups and stuff, probably over 100 people to Israel. Maybe that's a little bit, a lot, let's just say a lot of people. I don't exactly know the amount, but it's a place where I bring my friends. I took my two oldest friends in the world who had never been, quite frankly, I don't think either of them had left the country. Uh-huh. And last summer I said, you know what, guys, I've known you since we're 3 years old. Let's go. Johnny's taking you. We had a great trip the summer before. I went with my wife and kids, you know, who had been, but my kids each brought a friend. By the way, Christians, not Jews, okay? Right. These kids had an amazing time. My sister-in-law came. One of my close friends, Craig, came. Obviously my wife, my brother-in-law, and my sister. And we just kind of rocked it out.
Well, that is accurate. I mean, and you're right. I mean, from landing and having somebody pick us up to dial at a hotel to meals to friends to baristas, like every single thing, I was like, "Damn, you live here?"
Wasn't that weird? Like, I was running into people that were recognizing me that I wasn't recognizing.
Oh, no. And I think one of the biggest trips for me was, it was a simple story, but when we're driving back, you just know where you're going. Like, I don't even know that in LA, and I've lived here for 12 years. Like, I need to pull out MapQuest or Waze or whatever it is. But on that note, I heard it from a ton of people along this trip. They followed our journey on social media, got a lot of questions. People are waiting for this podcast. What was the trip like? What did you do? What was the adventure like? Clearly, there was a ton
everything
to talk about. But I think first, before we dive into the specifics, what was your purpose to go on this trip with me? And what did you want to get accomplished? Do you feel it got there? And then we could dive into some of the anecdotes.
Well, I think there's two things. You know what? There's what you call the nonprofit imperative. Okay. I mean, when I discovered that there was American football in Israel, and I, as you know, are over at Israel 21C right now, what we're doing is, we have a digital magazine right now, but what we're doing is we're doing original content in video. And so we're doing great stories about things that people just wouldn't know. Craft beer, tattoos. I mean, things that you're like, huh? But when I found out there was American football being played in Israel, I thought, well, you know, you and I have been looking for an excuse to go away together. So this was the, and you know, and you never have time because, you know, our schedules never seem to line up. And here was an opportunity for our schedules to line up. So first I looked at it from that point of view. But then second, I looked at it from the point of view of a little trickery.
Oh.
A little trickery, yeah. I'm sharing something you probably didn't know.
No,
I'm like,
I'm
going to bring Yogi back to his roots a little bit. Hmm. Okay? I wanted to take you, essentially I wanted to take you back home in a sense. Or not home, but to a place that represented part of your home. And, you know, call that selfish, because I believe that people need to understand from where they have come from. And knowing about you and your stories and your mom, and having listened to your mom's podcast and gotten the opportunity to talk to your mom. And I think I said your mom reminded me a little bit of my own mother. So, and I said, well, I got to bring Yogi back. I got to bring you. So there was a little bit of like, you know, I'm going to get him there.
Oh, I appreciate that. So on the football front,
yep.
For me, the big takeaway was clearly they're not as skilled as people in the U.S. But to me, the passion was just as much as a sold-out game at Autzen Stadium when Oregon's playing, or when the Coliseum's rocking. I mean, the fans are into it. They're dialed. They've got this incredible passion for it. And that blew my mind. I didn't know if it would just be a club sport. You know, I can remember talking to Michael Kendricks, the linebacker for the Eagles, and I said, hey, man, what did you think about Israel football? He goes, I thought it was soccer before coming over.
Mm-hmm.
And that passion absolutely lit me up, man.
I think that's a great word to describe that country. What I always notice is they live life with passion. And when you are confronted every day, literally ecstasy with your very existence. You know, it's not like you think about it. We get in the car and we want to go drive to Las Vegas. We cross the border. We want to, you know, go drive to Arizona. We cross the border. We want to go to Oregon. We cross the border. There's really no crossing borders in Israel.
Yeah, fair.
Okay, and so you cross the border, you're confronted with many people who don't want you around, which is very unfortunate. And I wish it was different. I like the idea that, you know, it would be much better if we could all get along.
Right.
But nonetheless, that's not the reality. And again, when you go there, as much as I've been there for things that are, you know, I've been there during wars. They don't call them wars, whatever they want to call them. But, you know, I've been in bomb shelters. Matter of fact, one of the most moving things, I went about a year and a half ago for Israeli Memorial Day. By the way, what's interesting is they do Memorial Day, and then the very next day they do Independence Day. Mm. They mourn, and then they celebrate, which is actually a great way, if you think, to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the most beautiful parts, I think, of the culture is dealing with stuff and moving on.
But they live with passion. And I went to a ceremony. It was after the war. It was called Tzukatan. And I sat at this ceremony where they had all the faces of the 50-some young men who had, you know, been killed in this war. I'm sitting at the ceremony, mind you. I speak Hebrew, but these people, they speak fast. And it's very hard for me to understand. But you see the pictures, you see the images, and the tears are flowing from my eyes because these young men sacrificed themselves, you know, for the good of everyone that was sitting there. And that's a really, you know, what bugs me is hear a little bit about our own country. Well, there's a lot of things, but we're not going to get into that right now, okay? But notwithstanding, on Memorial Day in the United States, it's just a day to go have a hot dog and a beer and a hamburger. And I feel like days like Memorial Day and Veterans Day here, I just wish people would pull back a little bit and pay a little bit more respect to the men and the women who have sacrificed so you and I here today can do what we're doing.
Right. No, there were some brilliant stories about young kids who totally get that. I think when you're in Israel, as you know, and the listener's not sure if you do, but everybody, if you're born there, you serve in the military.
Oh my God, remember those kids? I mean, we saw kids. You know, they literally, and they are children, you know, what are they, 18, 19 years old?
Right.
You know, you and I are worried about at that time going out and having a beer and partying. You know, these kids are holding Uzis.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there's this, at least in my eyes, there was this duality there, not only just of you, but also of this country of, it's not, you don't walk over there, you don't feel like you're going to get, you know, blown up. You don't feel like there's going to be terrorism everywhere. There's this passion, there's a beauty, there's a love of life, and then there's this underside of like, look, we're going to protect our country. And we got to literally sit down and talk to young men and women who are playing football that also during the day or during the week, they're protecting the country, and then they get to release in this game just like we do when we were kids.
Yeah. I'm curious, what surprised you? If there was one, look, I'm sure there were several things, but what was one or two of the things that surprised you when you were over there?
I love the community, you know, like it really felt connected, you know, like there's this great commercial I saw on like Canadian YouTube or something last night. And it was about, this woman walking into an elevator, and I'll make sure I link it in the blog post, and everybody's on their phone. Then she walks out into her apartment and everybody's on their phone. She walks into her apartment, her roommate's on her headset, and she takes their dining room table and puts it in the hallway of the apartment building and just forces everyone who gets out of the elevator to sit down and have a dinner with no phone. And for me, that was like an emotional moment watching this at midnight. And it reminded me of Israel because we had so many amazing, of course, the food was great, but the idea of these meals, of these communal efforts where stories are being shared, you know, hands are touching, elbows are bumping, like you really are connected versus let me get through my meal, appetizer, main course. I don't have time for dessert because I got to get to my email, which is the majority of meals here, and not being pejorative or being a jerk about it, but it's just it's a cultural reality versus let me just be where my feet are, be really grounded and connect. And I felt connected with dozens of people who I had never met within 10 seconds.
Interesting. By the way, and I think, you know what, if you were to ask me what, why there, why, because you just nailed it for me. It feels like every time I'm there, I'm having a meal with someone and we're having a dialogue. We're having meaningful conversation. We're talking about something. People aren't on their phones. They're not texting. People are present.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it's present. And the value of community, and I think that goes back to what I was saying, because when your country is so small and you can't really go anywhere.
Yeah, it is small.
Okay. People are, I mean, think, I think we had probably, oh my goodness, I don't even know how many meals, but if you think about everything from our meal at Kathy's grandparents, you know, we might as well have been just part of the family. We get there, it's like, welcome, sit down, eat, enjoy, do the dishes. Doesn't matter. By the way, you and Kathy are doing dishes while her grandpa is playing the piano. Okay? You know, I mean, we're chatting up a storm. It's kind of weird, but that was almost every meal in a sense.
Yeah, that was interesting. And for the listeners, we got invited to Shabbat dinner, which is every Friday night in the Jewish tradition. And we went to the co-host, Kathy Cohen, who you heard her podcast the previous to this episode on Life Without Limits. And we go to her house, and it's her whole family, pretty much, you know.
Aunts, uncles, cousins.
Aunts, uncles, cousins. And to me, there was two amazing moments there. One, of course, when her grandfather and her grandmother and grandfather, both Holocaust survivors, epic stories. And he gets on the piano and just, it was like he scored a movie to the dinner.
Yeah, by the way, and he doesn't read music, remember that?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Brilliant, brilliantly plays. But what I remember that night is that Kathy's sisters across the table, her cousins across the table, and they're making jokes, they're talking about pop culture, they're singing rap songs. Like, it's everything that a kid would do here, which to me is like, it's not this over the top, you've got to be super religious type of country. It's, we respect where we're from. If we choose to go down that road, great. But we're still going to be kids. And to me, that was a cool takeaway of from the football to a dinner, is that kids are kids, young adults are young adults are adults, grandparents are grandparents. And we all, you know, I say the phrase all the time, right? We all speak ball. We're all the same, regardless of where we are and what our borders may allow or not allow.
Well, but I think culturally what you have is this idea of community, particularly in that country. So Friday night, you go to dinner with your family.
It's a non-negotiable.
It's like a non-negotiable. And, you know, someone that's been there so many times, I think about it, I always have somewhere to go on a Friday night. I've been literally invited by perfect strangers. My goodness, do you remember that gentleman that you met on the plane?
Yeah, this guy invited me on the plane. He slept the entire flight to Israel, and we land, and he invited me to dinner.
That's right.
It was just classic.
Yeah, and that's the way it is. Look, it's, again, you know, we're also open, but I also think it's a little bit more of an open society as I see it over there.
Yeah.
By the way, it makes some people uncomfortable.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. All right. So lots to unpack. There's a lot that we did there. I want to transition to the tree. I think this is a fun story, and you'll all see this video. It'll come out. It's going to be a kind of a comedic piece on Israel21c.org. And if you're in the U.S., and maybe other countries, I don't know, but if somebody passes away or something happens and you're a young Jewish boy in temple, they give you a tree and you send it to Israel. And you,
or a girl.
Or a girl, yes, excuse me. They give you a tree and say, it's going to be buried in your honor in Israel. And you just
planted,
kind of,
not buried, planted.
Buried, planted, exactly. And I've totally screwed that up. But anyway, you have this imagination of where this tree is going to be. And we had this fun idea of, like, let's go find our tree.
Let's go find Yogi's tree.
And it's pretty gnarly when you learn about it. Since 1901, they've been planting trees. And there's over 250,000 acres of forest in Israel and over 240 million trees. And I went back and I was watching the footage yesterday about when Kathy and I go exploring for my proverbial tree. And she says a very poignant line of how it's just a symbolic element of life. And life is always moving and passing forward to people. And I thought that was really unique. And I'm curious, as you watched it as a producer of that piece, how did that hit you, the search for the tree that you get gifted as a young kid?
Well, first of all, you know, I too always wondered, okay, so like we plant these trees, you know, the JNF, it's like the Jewish National Fund. You know, you plant a tree in someone's honor, in someone's memory, whatever it may be, whatever the circumstance may be. And where is that tree? Like, where does that tree go? And the truth is, it goes in the ground. But for me, what the meaning was, trees really do represent life. Think about it. You plant a tree, you water it, it grows, it matures, it gets bigger. It's, you know, it kind of, the leaves grow, it's ever changing. And a tree is ostensibly, if you think about it, you could say is almost representative of us. You know, we're born, we grow. If we're watered properly, we grow properly.
Mm.
And guess what? Sometimes the trees get chopped down, you know, which is also representative, obviously, of perhaps the passing of people.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm not trying to make it profound or anything, but trees do represent life. And what I love is that there's just a lot of trees.
Yeah.
A lot of trees. And I, and again, you know, when you're in the moment, you sometimes don't think about it. But when I'm sitting here talking to you and you can kind of pull back, you know, and look at it, it's pretty kind of crazy.
Yeah. No, it was a trip to just drive through the forest. And you have to understand, Israel is, it's a small country, right?
It is the size of the state of the wonderful New Jersey.
Wow. That's like even big for me. Like, because we drove all over, you know?
Yeah,
we and did. You don't think forest, right? You think beach, you think desert.
You think Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, exactly. Yeah. Which takes me to the next place on this trip to paint people a picture. So we dropped into Tel Aviv first. We saw some really cool football. We made our way to the forest of Jerusalem. We're going to get to the old city of Jerusalem here at the end. But thankfully, on this trip, we got to go see, as you referenced, one of the reasons for me to come over, the town that my mom grew up in, which was Haifa. And we wake up one morning and we drive up north. And to me, that was a really cool experience to go to this port city, which was a port village kibbutz in 1949 when she was born there. And just to feel that culture was one of my three big takeaways from the trip.
Well, it was really important for me to bring you there. You know, it was just, if nothing else, I was going to make sure that you got to Haifa to see where ostensibly you come from.
Right.
And your brother and your sister, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. She, before I left, and everybody on this podcast knows what Life in a Walk did for me, changed my life. And I'm going to tell a story later on about that. But, when we got there, prior to me leaving on this trip, my mom and I were on, I was on the beach in Venice, and I call her on the phone, and we have the best conversation I've ever had in my entire life with her. Over an hour, and I just ask her question after question, just peppering her about growing up. And she's telling me, and she's funny because she's Israeli, and she's like, "Yo, you stop asking me these questions," and then she'll give me a great answer, right? And it was absolutely hilarious. And she tells me the story about when she's two, she would wake up, and she would pick oranges and avocados. And away she would go on her day.
But the fact that she remembers something from 2 years old is pretty, I mean,
it's amazing.
What do you remember from
zero.
Two?
Zero. Nothing. And then she'd say her day would start after she would do that, and her mom would give her a glass, and they'd put ice in this glass, and they'd walk up this hill. And they'd walk up this massive hill, and they'd go to the field, and be the field of poppies, all these flowers. And her mom would pick these flowers, and she'd put them in this glass, because at the time they got to the top of the hill, the ice would have melted to water, and they'd walk back down, and the flowers would be in water, and they'd have life. And I just imagine this tiny two-year-old hand being engulfed by a parent's hand. And we all know it's one of the cutest things you could possibly see or imagine. And it was just something I'll never forget. And it was fascinating for me to watch that and to imagine it. And I remember, you know, we took a bunch of pictures, we had fun, and then I kind of went off into the hills on my own for a few minutes. And I just sat there and I felt connected to this little girl running up these hills that I was standing in the middle of. And look, obviously the city's changed dramatically since 1951 when she left, 1952. But I felt a connection that I wonder you may have felt that with your mom. You know, I think kids do have a different connection with mom than they do with anybody else in their family, and specifically with a Jewish heritage that I've always felt connected to, but not necessarily connected with.
Mm-hmm.
That was a poignant moment for me.
Yeah, listen, I think that like having, you know, had the opportunity to talk to your mom and spend obviously a lot of time with you, I saw it. I mean, that thing, I watched you connect while you were there, which for me, again,
What did I see?
I saw, you know, you look into, you know, what do they say? The eyes or the window into the soul. And so just kind of watching you process, you know, almost methodically, you know, viewing, breathing in the air, planting literally your feet on the ground, taking a moment, looking to the left, looking to the right, looking behind you, looking ahead, looking up, looking down. It was as if, you know, it's almost like you were like a tree and your roots were growing into the very ground. It's kind of fantastic, actually. And so, again, I love taking people there because I'd be lying if I said you were the first person I've seen this. Although I have to tell you something. I had a funny feeling that when we went on this journey together, that it would affect you in a way different than others. You know, I just suspected, and I think it did. And also the other thing that was really nice is that you can't help but, from our own relationship, when you spend time with someone like that, you know, it's funny. It's only 5 days, but it is intense. It is intense. And you saw a side of me, I saw a side of you, and you can't come out of it feeling more connected to each other, you know, as friends, as brothers. And so that also was a really wonderful, positive gift for me.
Yeah. Cool, man. Yeah, I echo that as well. All right, so let's transition to the final third of this conversation. There's a lot to unpack. But we wake up one morning and we're ready to go surfing. You're going to get a wetsuit on. We're going to go paddle out, freaking fired up, man. But there's no waves. And we're not going to go surf. Okay, so what are we going to do? And I had been emailing with a best friend of mine, a producer buddy, of like, hey, if you could ask people in Israel, what would you ask them? We're having this dialogue back and forth. And we're talking about the around the word of love. Well, what would you ask? How do you love? What is love? What would you ask? And kind of meditate on it. I think about it and come up with the idea to ask people the question, what does it mean to love? And you say, go for it. You don't even flinch. And to be completely honest, when you're like, what do you want to do today? I was like, I don't know how he's going to respond to this, but this is kind of what's on my heart. Let's see how he reacts. And I throw it out there and you don't flinch. Let's go. Let's ask people. And you go to producer mode. We start pulling people off the rocks that are fishing in Tel Aviv. And then we work our way to Jerusalem. And away we went throughout the country asking that question. Curious what you thought we would get from people's answer when we asked them the simple question of what does it mean to love?
I was looking for to be surprised because I think, listen, everyone has their own interpretation. It's very interesting. Again, when you look at young people, it often related to a relationship.
Yeah.
Right? With, you know, whether it was a young girl who missed her boyfriend, you know? And then if you looked, as we kind of aged up the spectrum a little bit, it became a little bit more introspective in terms of how they felt and in terms of how it applied to themselves. But then as we continued to go up and we met that two of the most fascinating people we met were this beautiful, beautiful nun who was probably in her 80s, I guess.
Yeah.
And then a bishop who reminded me, by the way, of Father Mulcahy from MASH. But their answers were one, and listen, I don't even think it was because they were a nun or a bishop. I think because they had wisdom, and obviously, maybe they've been asked this before, but even people that were, let's call it their contemporaries, it became more selfless in terms of their answer. So you see it kind of just progression of it. So I thought it was really interesting. And I never, when you asked me, you know, about let's go do that, it just seemed like, well, of course. What does it mean to love? That makes sense to me. I certainly would like to hear from people what the heck that means.
It was fascinating, and ever since I've been back on this from this trip, I've obviously we've been watching all this footage back, and it hits you in different ways at different times. And to me, I thought of a couple of things. One, I aligned it to football, and I thought because you know, we were lucky, Israel was lucky, some NFL players showed up, and I thought that some of the NFL players that actually decided to make that trip got to see the love for a game, and some people it was obviously well publicized decided not to go for. In their eyes, political reasons, whatever, disagree, agree, you have whatever opinion you want. But to me, a cool part about the NFL players being there was that they saw what it means to love a game. And they got to give back to these young men and women that look up to them. And then you saw love from a communal standpoint when mm-hmm. people were going to dinner together, like we did. We went to literally somebody's house and they cooked us a dinner all night long while his wife and his daughter were sleeping upstairs. I mean, it was a communal love. And then, of course, there was the love of celebration, which was just in the streets every single day, of people just enjoying their day. And then the dramatic love to me was when we got to the Western Wall, the Wailing Wall. And personally, I had to be there. And for me, it was the third time I was there. First time I went there 9 years ago, and I went and touched it. And I was like, is this thing on? Like, nothing happened. I was supposed to cry. I was supposed to feel it. And then I went and spent a week around Israel, and I came back. And I started bawling when I got there because I was like, I get what it means to be here now. Mm-hmm. And coming back a third time after our entire week of exploring, clearly it touched me in a powerful way of, yeah, what does it mean to love a country? What does it mean to love yourself? And as we asked dozens of people the question of what does it mean to love, to me getting back to the wall was a great example of the idea of love because to me it's in the middle of an old city in Jerusalem, the holiest place in the world, where whether you're a Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Arabic, Palestinian, whatever it is, you're within feet of this wall, and you can all connect to the simple idea of love and loving whatever it is you believe in.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that very love, which is obviously very important, you know, a city that also represents love, it also is the center of conflict.
Yeah.
Okay, so love and conflict. It's unbelievable how something, one city, can represent something that is completely, stands to be out of alignment. Think about that.
How do you make sense of that?
I don't. It doesn't, it doesn't make sense. Because, look, I have this theory that, what I always call it, it's the vocal minority that screw it up for the rest of us. Mm. Meaning that, look, I don't care what your politics are. I don't care what your religion is. I don't care whether you're a guy, a girl, straight or gay, transgender. I don't care if you're from Mars and you're living here. What do most people want? They want food on their table. They want love of family. They just want their children to live in a world of hope. And, but yet, there are people, look, I think that, you know, we are all products of how we are informed. And so from a young age, if you are completely drilled on that, you need to hate. Unfortunately, hate sometimes ends up in your heart. Mm-hmm. By the way, that doesn't matter who you are, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's a minority of people, but still, sometimes the minority becomes the vocalist. So it's really challenging. But I want to believe, again, because when we ask people what it means to love, I'm an optimistic guy, and look, I have my issues in terms of, you know, obviously I believe in the state of Israel and her right to exist. I also think that the, you know, the Palestinian people, yes, it's complicated, and I almost feel like they, in a sense, need to figure out their own. They need to figure out what they want, but they deserve to live in peace. Their children, like anyone else, deserve to be educated. I mean, all of us deserve to live in peace and love and hug each other. I mean, and by the way, we saw Palestinians and Jews and Arabs and Bedouins all living there. So why can't it be that way? I mean, look, I don't want to go into the politics of all this, but in our own country right now, it would just be nice if we could just all talk in a civil manner.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice.
Wouldn't that be nice?
When you look back on this trip, what do you think fills your heart the most? You know, you're flying back, you land, you're going for a run, you're on your, you know, Jonathan's a big spin guy, you're on your bike, you're working out. What's the thing that you don't, that won't leave you from this trip?
You know, the thing that never leaves me is when I come back here, I miss it there.
Mm. I could see you living there someday.
It's complicated because it's not... I also have to be respectful of my family. And yet, just because when you make a commitment to someone in your life, your wife, your children, you know, life is full of compromise, right? But just because I want something doesn't mean my wife wants something. And again, what I really respect about Fran is, I don't want to say she allows me, you know, because that's not the right, but she honors that this is something that I love and she knows how important it is to me. So we find balance in that.
Mm.
I mean, there are not many, listen, you know, many married people, how many spouses, you know, from whether man, woman, you know, they say, okay, go off and go fill your soul.
Right.
You know, and I'll be here when you get back and it's all good. But, you know, it's not her journey. So right. My idea is how do I find the balance? But I do miss it. I mean, I miss it every day. And that's quite frankly why I do some of the things that I do.
When I was 23, I took my first real big trip. I lived in Australia. I came to LA and I was like, all right, I want to go see the world. I went and hiked Machu Picchu.
That's cool.
It was awesome, yeah. And I didn't really know anything. I had one bag and just kind of figured it out. And within that, I learned a quote that I just kind of made up that I think has rung true for me ever since, is that we often go to see places when we travel. Machu Picchu, the Western Wall, Christ the Redeemer, on and on and on and on. But ultimately, we see ourselves in a different light. And I think it happens on every trip. So I'm curious, in this trip, is that accurate for you? And how do you see yourself coming off of this adventure in Israel?
Well, for me, it's interesting. You know what? I like to say I acquire friends when I'm over there. And every time I go to Israel, by the way, not even just Israel, you know what? I've traveled, you know, recently to Berlin, you know, to Spain. I'm curious. I am curious, and I'm curious about people. I love people. I love to kind of find out what's going on, what makes them tick. And so, coming off this particular trip, I made some new friends. And that's awesome, because I got to learn about people. I mean, my goodness, we went to an EDM party.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that. Yeah. That was epic.
Okay, we went to an EDM party. I mean, listen, not going to get into how old I am, okay? Okay, but I like to say that, you know, generally speaking, of my friends in Israel, I tend to be about 10 to 15 years and sometimes 20 years older than them. But I see things that I would never even see here in the States. And so I experience new things and I get to bring those experiences back here to the States and kind of think about it and learn. Everything to me, you know, when I come back from each one of these trips, I've learned something new that I hope I can share with my family, my kids. You know, the whole thing is like, what I really hope is that when I come back is that that my kids can kind of see what I do, how it is to be passionate about something, how to care deeply about something, how to commit to something, how to follow through with something. By the way, maybe how to fail at something. But it's, to me, you know, it's an opportunity to share with them. And whether it gets through or not, I have no idea. My son is 16 and a half years old, okay? Let me tell you something, you know? I mean, you've heard him in the car sitting next to me. He's half asleep, okay? He's a good boy. He's a good kid. But, you know, you hope, and really, and I use the word hope because none of us really know.
Right.
That how you live your life and the values that you have somehow will rub off on your children and perhaps their friends. But you know what? Who knows? We'll, as they say, we'll see.
So was there something from this trip then that you came back that you hoped that your kids have felt or your wife felt since you've been home that you, that in regarding how you were impacted specifically? Or even how maybe you look at yourself after this trip, because I see you differently, 1,000%.
Look, you know what? It's I go there so often that, you know, the joke is it's like, you know, we talked about how it's the size of the state of New Jersey. When I was a kid, I used to go to New Jersey all the time to visit my cousins. So like going to Israel for me is like getting in a car and going to New Jersey. But, you know, every trip, something unexpected happens. So, and not even withstanding being with you, Yaniv, was that? That was his name, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I'll let you talk more about that because you're much more articulate than I am.
Debatable.
But the idea of seeing a 22-year-old young man, how football in Israel changed his life. He didn't come to the game until he was 17 years old. He lost his father at the age of 21. He then lost his mentor, and how this sport in a country that doesn't play this sport, how it changes his life. And then he's able to take that to the next level where he gets a scholarship to play college football at 22 at a D2 school, and how he is so proud of that. And thankful and hugging us and telling us how wonderful we are and what we mean to him. And I'm thinking, what we mean to him? How about what he means to us? You know, how a 22-year-old young man can inspire a guy who's 51 years old. And for me to bring that back and share that story with my family, with my friends, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, that's the thing. Whether you're 100 or whether you're 5, there can be inspiration.
Yeah.
And so that story for me, that was a crazy, like, I mean, that was a crazy story. And he gave me an Israeli flag and he wrote something beautiful on it, which I'm going to have framed. And that will be a memory.
Yeah. That was a big time one. Jonathan, you told the story really well with this young man.
Nah, Yogi, you always tell him better.
Well,
this
one
the adjectives.
This one will be on Israel21c.org for sure.
Yeah.
And it's a feature on this young man who never played. And you got to understand, there's no high school football in Israel. So he picks up the sport at 17. He's teaching himself how to play O-line via YouTube.
And, is that how he did it?
Yeah, and he's working multiple jobs as well as serving in the military. And then at 22, as he is now, he gets Scully to come to the U.S. to play because he went over on a road trip with his mom, and they traveled around the Midwest, the South, the Northeast, just visiting different schools. And this kid has real size. I mean, he can really play. And for him, he felt he was an inspiration, to use his words, to every fat kid. And I hate that phrase, but he said, that's who I was. I had no self-esteem. And then I lost my dad. I only had a ball to turn to. And I'm doing the interview, getting chills. I look to you. You're crying, which is...
Oh, my God. I went off in the corner. You know, it's interesting. Actually, you know, again, thank you for reminding me. And I do mean that. I went off in the corner. And what I realized at that moment, what I do with this nonprofit and what I do in my life, the fact that we have the ability to change people's lives and allow them to tell those stories, that affected me deeply.
Yeah.
And I realized, okay, purpose. Living a purposeful, meaningful life. And yeah, so, but thank you, because honestly, had you not, you know, interviewed this kid and kind of gotten him to speak, It was very funny. Remember he said he didn't like to speak?
Yeah, he spoke forever.
He spoke forever. I think he's still speaking.
Yeah, seriously. that was a great moment. All right, so we only got into probably half the things we did. I mean, we connected with the Burning Man community, which you know if you're in LA, it's called Midburn. We walked the city. We went to a refugee school. We really did a lot of unique elements in this country. There's going to be a ton of cool features on Israel21c.org, as well as obviously all my social channels and beyond. But to finish it off, I want to ask you a couple poignant questions that I love to ask people at the end of this podcast.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to answer them.
First and foremost, in your eyes, Jonathan, what does it mean to live a full life?
Oh, Yogi, you always ask the really easy questions, don't you? Well, first of all, I'm still living it. So what does it mean to live a full life? Can I let you know when it ends?
Right before, please.
Okay.
We can get it on camera.
Right before we can get it on camera. What's funny, it goes back to the idea of love, right? What does it mean to live a full life? I think, because I think you're probably going to ask me what it means to love next.
It's in there. It's in the final stage.
But the truth is, they're connected. I actually believe with it that they're connected. And I think it progresses. But to me, at this point in my life, because I think the answer is different, you know, as you kind of grow through life, to me, it's about the give back and what it means to love, what it means to live a full life. Is to live a life where you realize that there are things, people, that are just more important than self. And so the ability to give to community, to give to those that don't have, to raise children who have strong centers and the ability to go into the world and also give back. That's to me what it means to love, to live a full life. It means to experience, to be open, to realize that, you know, in the darkest of times, there's still light, that we're only here for a very, very, very short time. And, you know, my mom died obviously at 58. My sister is a survivor of cancer. I've watched, unfortunately, people die young, but I've watched people live long lives. You don't know. You don't know when your number's coming up. And this idea that you ultimately have any control over it. So for me, I just want to experience as much as I can and take that experience and share it and give it to others. Try to give love, compassion, and you know what, along the way, quite frankly, have fun. I want to have fun, because you got one chance to have fun. And you know what, and I'll tell you what, remember that crazy, you know, that crazy cliche, do what you love and the money will follow. And yeah, by the way, that has many different meanings to different people, but you know, money's an interesting thing. It's a bit of a trap, actually. You know, because to the extent it has no value in terms of love per se. I don't think you love me for my money.
No.
And I certainly don't love you for your money.
Fair. Right?
But I think that it's just, I don't even know where I'm going with this, by the way. Look, the bottom line is that a full life is one that I'm living right now. And every day, I don't know what it's going to look like, but I'm damn going to try to have fun and share it and give back to the world.
Out of those elements that you describe, what makes you feel most alive?
Again, it's the idea to help inspire people and learn, because I think if I can inspire and learn, it only makes me better. I think the idea to, again, see my children grow. I'd love to see, you know, what would be wonderful is my wife is a writer. She's working on that. And it would be really I mean, to see her, I mean, honestly, what would really give me joy is to see her succeed in that. And what I mean, and by the way, it's not what I decide is success, right, but for her to feel that success, you know, success is something we feel.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be valued by how we're paid, you know, or, you know, it's really something that's an internal, it's an internal. So I'd like to see my wife internally feel that. You know, I'd love to continue to see my friends grow, my business grow. But in the end, it's as much as, you know, it's really not about me. And quite frankly, I'd love to see this thing that I'm working on at my nonprofit grow. So yeah, I got a lot to do, dude. I got a lot, you know what? I got a lot to do.
So this is I think we all know the answer to this, but how do you feel about the word limits?
There are none. I mean, limits, you know what? There are self-limits. We kind of impose limits upon ourselves. I think that, look, no limits, right? You know, you and I know about that. And the fact is that limits are something that are created by others. You know, I was said to a friend very recently, let's not operate in the world of what we can't do. Let's talk about what we can do.
Yeah.
And if we fail, we just keep going on.
I love that. All right, final question, because I think I get asked this a lot. People are like, I want to go on a trip. Let's go on an adventure together. So was I hard to travel with? Was it all right? If you had to describe to somebody who wanted to go on an adventure, you have a good time?
Dude, you were like, you were simple. I mean, pashut, as they say in Hebrew, which means kal. Easy. And come on, let's face it, without getting to the details, because I travel a lot. Okay, you got some
of, it was easy,
you got, man. You got some of the accoutrements that after the way you told me how you normally travel, this was like, you know, traveling like, you know, in style.
it was different than any type of travel I usually do. But overall, Jonathan, this trip, it changed me. This one changed my life. I think that certain places do. India changes you. I think Cuba changes you. I think Cambodia changes you. There's certain countries and places that just change your soul. And this trip, it changed me. I see where my mom was from. I got to connect to the sport that I've given my life to on a totally different plane and a different level. And I got to ask people a fundamental question of life, which led to me at like 1 a.m. on the beach in Tel Aviv, our final night, fully having like straight monologue self-analyzation. And none of that happens without you bringing me on this trip, man.
That's great. Do I get one question?
Sure. Yeah.
So Yogi, I want you to finish what I'm about to ask you. I wish.
It's a good question. To be transparent, I was going to ask you that and held off for the record. But I'm glad you brought it back to me. I wish. I don't know. It goes back to, like, if I'm going to be completely candid. So I'm sitting on the beach. It's 1:30 in the morning. And you know my final ritual on these trips. I leave my shoes, right? So I go have this moment, and I'm just kicking it on the beach. Just whatever, an hour or so. And I'm sitting there reflecting on this trip, and I'm saying, we've asked dozens of people this fundamental question, what does it mean to love? I was like, okay, I haven't been asked that question. Time for me to answer it. I pull up my camera and I say, all right, Yogi, what does it mean to love? And I sit there and I go, well, I can give you a great answer, right? I can give you a great answer about what I wish for. I can give you a great answer about what it means to love. I'm well-read. I could pull out a Paulo Coelho quote. I just interviewed some really amazing people. But the reality is that regarding what does it mean to love, I don't know. And I thought back and reflected and said, I've loved the game. I've loved family. Clearly, I've loved friends. I've loved travel. I've experienced. But I don't know if I've gone there in my life and fully gone for it with someone. And I was like, but I'm willing now. I'm ready to find out. And that was a cool turning point for me. And then I reflected upon my storytelling path. And every story, starting with Life in a Walk, has been a peel back of a layer of my heart, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, diving into my dad. Then you look at every film I've done and we've been a part of, from Elite 11 and diving into the passion to a game, to the Cape and sailing around the world, to this podcast, to ultimately What does it mean to be human? The short film we do to this. What does it mean to love? And to me, it pulled back, and I married that with my personal life. And I just have felt myself for the last 4 years just opening a vulnerable side of myself that I never opened outside of a game or loved ones. So what does it mean to love? To answer the question, I don't know, but I'm fired up to find out, is the biggest takeaway I got from the trip. Then to ask what I wish. Well, of course, there's the obvious, right? You wish for health, safety, all those things around the people you care about. But personally, I wish that I wish that I keep going down this path. And that's what I wish for myself, to just continue to remain as open as humanly possible and prepare and prepare and prepare to be open for whatever comes, from a show to a human to life to a cup of coffee, whatever it is, but to remain as open as I feel now. Because I feel as open as I've ever been in every plane of my life. And I credit this trip to peeling back a massive layer there, which was really cool for me, you know?
Well, I wish that you accomplished that.
Yeah. Yeah, me too, man. Okay, cool. So I wish you all continue to subscribe and share on this podcast. And this was an absolute blast, from the Authentic Cafe with your mom to the Vibe Cafe here in Venice Beach in my studio, man. This was an authentic convo. Appreciate the time. And as we always end this podcast, Jonathan, with the simple phrase that the only limits that you have in life are the ones you set yourself. Peace.